welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. We are going to do something today that I think is so Cincinnati. It's probably a lot of cities, but it's definitely so Cincinnati. We are going to talk about the weather. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love, and our special guest today is Frank Marzullo, the morning meteorologist on Fox 19. You know, that's kind of how I start my day with him, listening as I get ready about what the weather's going to be like. And so we're going to talk to him in person and ask him all of the burning questions.
You know, I think he has a tough job in any Midwest city because the weather changes so rapidly. What's the joke? If you don't like the weather here, wait 5 minutes and it'll change. And I was thinking about when I lived out west in the summertime. You know, wintertime, you got, you know, winter activity and things like that. But in the summertime out west, it's pretty much like, you know, high of 85 during the day, low of 60 at night, you know, rinse and repeat all summer long. So it must be a very boring job if you are in a place where the weather is the same all the time, but not here.
You probably seem like you're so smart, though, because the way you're always right.
You're always right, yeah.
The meteorologists here, they do get a little grief when, you know, they're not 100% right. And it's such a small town, too. You see them around. They're celebrities. And so I think that they do have probably a really tough job because
I think so, especially spring in Cincinnati. That can get dicey, you know.
And we've had a lot of extreme weather, too.
Now, are we approaching fall, you think? Do you think we'll have a faux fall where it'll get cool and we're like pulling our sweaters out and then all of a sudden it gets like 90 degrees and 90% humidity and we're sweating again?
100%. And it basically is when I switch out all of my summer shoes for my winter shoes, which is a gigantic project in my household, and then it will be warm again and I'll have to go down in the basement and find like my summer shoes. So that's a guarantee it's happening.
That could be a future topic, Sherry's shoes.
So this is usually the time where we talk about, you know, kind of the big things happening in the city. It definitely, you can tell Labor Day is coming. It's been a little quiet. We're about to get a city manager any minute, but we're not going to bore you with that till we actually get a city manager. And we have some news to talk about there. But yesterday we heard that the Carew Tower has been sold, which is actually big news in downtown. And it did get us to thinking. A lot of changes coming downtown.
There are a lot of changes happening downtown. The Carew Tower, as most people know, was the highest building in Cincinnati and for the time was one of the highest skyscrapers in the nation. Is no longer the tallest building in Cincinnati. The Great American Building.
The Tierra Tower, which is beautiful on the skyline.
Which we could probably challenge them on that because the Tierra gives them that extra height to be the tallest, but you can't like set up your office in the Tierra. I mean, but that's another story.
But you can play tennis on the roof, remember that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, but it's an iconic building. It's known for its Art Deco details. I think if you grew up here, you either went to prom, you know, at what was the Omni Netherland before it became the Hilton, which is attached to it, which is not part of the sale. That's, I think, still going to be operated independently, the hotel part of the structure. If you want to see the best views of the city, you can get to the observation deck of the Carew Tower. I think it still costs like less than $2. And it's really fun if you haven't done it. You go up the normal elevators, and then there's this like rickety old thing that
we've done it.
Yeah.
It's
but
been
it's
a
so
while,
fun.
Though.
Yeah. I think the weather's been really good lately, speaking of the weather. We should have a field trip to the top of the Carew Tower. But no one's really sure what is going to happen. It used to be mostly office spaces. Back when I started at the Enquirer for a while, there was a food court and shopping on the base level. It's had many iterations at the arcade. You can still go see Santa there, though. I hope that stays.
I know, and that's a good Santa, too. That's the one where we usually go. It's a beautiful setting. We like that Santa.
It's where Hathaway's was and still is before
sort
they moved.
Of, yeah.
To, yeah, yeah.
I mean, Hathaway's moving. You know things are changing.
You know things are changing. I think, you know, what's likely to happen is what's been happening to a lot of spaces downtown, and that's living space. Condos and apartments and things like that, because Cincinnati is a city that is seeing renewed interest in people living downtown.
So I think we're putting living space in the old Macy's building. No one is allowed to hold me to this. This is the podcast. This is not like a story that I put on Cincinnati.com.
Right.
It's all the things that I kind of call, because I do read Cincinnati.com, like basically every story every day, even when I'm on vacation. But I think the Macy's building, living space, of course, there's living space above Kroger. And now I can't imagine that this would be office space. So it has to be, you know, it's like the great mystery of what's going to go here. Of course, it's probably going to be living space.
But it's such a cool space. You know, some of the nuts and bolts, the property was in foreclosure. There was extensions for the foreclosure because of the current owner, or now the former owner, saying that a deal was close. And then finally we learned that a New York-based developer purchased the property. No plans yet for sure on what it's going to be. But I think it's probably a good sign. And by the way, we were talking in the news meeting that it's kind of a steal.
At $18 million. I thought the same
million,
thing.
$18 million, yeah.
It has to, I'm sure, be totally like, redone, that, though. What do you need to put into it? $100 million, probably?
Probably, to do that. But still, if you think about, like, what's $18 million buy you? Like three homes in Indian Hill.
I mean, of course, the biggest joke during the PG's trial, not that that was a joking matter, but there was a lot of talk about 435 Elm for a dollar.
Right.
And like that joke was, well, all the way to 435 Elm for a dollar.
Yeah. So I think it's a good sign, though. And we'll obviously be following this story. And
we're going to see changes with Saks, whatever is going to happen there.
Right. We have the Saks space there. We have, you know, all the, you know, Jeff Ruby moving the steakhouse from where it is now on 7th and Walnut.
That's the premier office space.
Right.
So that's
next
not
to the,
totally leased out. The race side of that, there's still some for lease signs mm-hmm. up there and everything. And I have had friends with their own businesses tour it and everything. It's like premier office space in there. So I think if that's not leased up, who's going to build something that's really right in the center?
Right. I think when Macy's closed, there were people who were very concerned because, you know, the last major department store moving out of a city. Now, technically, Saks was the last one. But I wouldn't call them your basic department store. No. I mean, I never shopped there. I walked in once and looked at a shirt and thought, okay, this is not for you, Burl. You can go back to Macy's. That there was a collective sadness because downtown, especially in Cincinnati, with the history of Federated department stores and iconic brands like Shillitoe's and, you know, which became Lazarus and Pogue's and all these places that we were finally seeing, you know, the last of the department stores leave, that there was this sadness and also concern. But those who know more about development than I do said, no, you know, this is the time where we're going to see, you know, new ideas, fresh ideas, investment. You know, this is a great time to be investing in downtown. And I think that's mostly played out.
Agree. And honestly, like, over a very short span of time, I moved here in 2002. And, you know, I went on, like, the whole tour of downtown and everything. And there's nothing that's the same. And that is not a very long time to completely redo a city. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a new skyscraper.
Right.
It really, that's a very short period of time in which people have gotten, the banks weren't here, gotten a lot of things done.
Right.
So when we talk about the convention district and how, oh, well, that's going to be coming, like in 10 years, that really could just be here. The whole thing.
I think you're right. I think that's the last major piece. Like, how is the city going to solve the convention hotel / facility dilemma? Now, obviously, we have a convention center. It's by most description not adequate to land the big conventions. And so are we going to be more of a boutique convention destination? Are we just going to go a different path? You know, maybe we should talk to Julie Calvert and see, like, what's really going to happen.
I love that idea. Yeah. I don't think she's been a guest before.
We'll put her on the list and put her on the hot seat.
Who would not want to have a convention here and come to the Cincinnati Zoo and see Fritz?
You just had.
I'm in love
you know
with
what?
Fritz.
We were trying to get through one podcast without mentioning the zoo or Fritz, and we failed.
That seems like a huge draw to me. I don't know.
I can't continue this conversation. Let's just talk to Frank.
All right. Special guest time. Welcome to special guest time on That's So Cincinnati. I am so excited to talk to Frank Marzullo today because I can vet my inner old lady weather watching with an actual expert. Hi, Frank.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. How are we doing?
We're good today. Thanks for agreeing to be on. I mean, who doesn't want to talk about the weather? Sometimes we talk about it in the other segments just to do it.
It's good job security, I'll tell you that, because the weather affects us every single day, especially now with everybody going back to school. And I feel like it's kind of a new start here. You know, a lot of people took big summer vacations, and now we got work, we got school, we got sports practices. Weather affects us every day.
So, to tell us a little bit about your background. I mean, I think that everyone is just like, Frank Marzullo is, you know, the Fox 19 meteorologist in the morning, but kind of take us back.
Yeah, I'll take you back. Well, thank you for that compliment. We got a big, big team there at the station, and even at all the other stations in town. You know, well, of course, you know, the competitiveness, you want to beat them. They're all very talented and all know what they're doing. But yeah, so I guess going back, to the early 80s, I would remember my first kind of love of weather was we were walking into the grocery store with my grandparents, and we walked out and the sky was really dark and the carts are blowing around, and there's a rainbow, and right next to the rainbow there was a funnel cloud. Now, not necessarily a tornado, because a funnel cloud can spin and not touch the ground. Once it touches the ground, it's a tornado. But that was my first kind of knowledge, or my first love of weather back then. And we were driving home and it was hailing and there was hail on the ground. This is before, you know, you had alerts on phones and all that. We're talking like probably 1985 or so. So that was my first love. And then I always knew I wanted to go into something, journalism. I'm a big talker. I like talking. When I was a little kid, I would set up pretend news studio in our basement. I took my parents like old patio furniture, like in the wintertime. And back then, yeah, you know, VHS tapes, I would wait for, it was up in Cleveland, the local Channel 5 there. I would wait for their logo to pop up on the screen. And I hit pause, play, record on my VCR and record it. And then I had a little graphic on my set with the TV. And I made my brothers run the teleprompter, which was like our old compact Passario computer.
I mean, I did my own neighborhood newspaper. I think it starts early sometimes.
It does, and then you go around. You're using your mom's hairbrush for a microphone. You know, talking to people.
Frank, and I'm here. Does tape exist of this? I don't even know what to call it. Your entry into the business.
Yes, there are. So I guess back then it was, I'm trying to think what it would have been. It was on those old video cameras.
It was camcorders tape. You could put the whole VH tape inside.
Your parents have this archived somewhere?
We do have some of them. Some of them probably have to be transferred into another way to get them on air. I've got some old pictures and stuff, but no, we do have them there. I remember one, I had to do a book report or something. And I forgot what it was, and I did it as, you know, like a Dateline NBC presentation, and I had like the Dateline open, and I don't know how I edited it back then, because it was a lot different then, but I somehow got my face in it. I did like the news anchor turn and smile, like with the Dateline chief. I was a little bit of a dork, but I digress.
It was good. Apparently, it was just good practice.
It was good practice, great practice. So then, you know, fast forward, I go to high school, obviously, and I knew I wanted to go into journalism of some sort. So our local meteorologist in Cleveland at the time, John Stalen was his name. He was at the CBS station there. I believe he's in Erie now. But he was our soccer coach at our high school. And so I went and talked with him and said, oh, our senior mentorship project's coming up. A lot of schools still do that. You know, you take 3 weeks at the end of the school year as a senior and you go and shadow somebody, right? You probably have that at the newspaper. Interns and shadow somebody to see what it's like. Kind of like, you know, come to work, see what we do today. And so I went with him for 2 weeks and woke up early in the morning, drove downtown Cleveland. He was the morning guy. And I'm like, you know what? This weather thing, I think I could do this. I really enjoyed it. Weather's different every day. I'm not a guy who can, you know, I give our reporters a lot of credit. I give you a lot of credit when you have to, you know, crime and death, and you got to knock on people's doors and talk with them. That's the hard work in this business. I can't handle that. I mean, I could probably do it, but I prefer to go more the other route, give folks information and, you know, keep them safe, protected. And so then I said, okay, I went to Ohio University, Bobcat, worked 3 years, went to school 3 years there. I was working in Parkersburg, West Virginia, WSAZ, Channel 3. It's funny, actually, my former coworker, now she's over at Channel 12, Sheila Gray, had just left there to come to Cincinnati at the time. So I was working the assignment desk there, which you guys know, but for, you know, those listening, those are the folks who are listening to police scanners, making the phone calls, getting the information to the reporters. I did that on the weekends while I was still in college. And then I put a weather tape together and I got a job my junior year in college at WTAP, the NBC station in Parkersburg, West Virginia. Did that for 9 months. And right before my senior year in at OU, I sent out, back then, you know, the VHS tape, just to get feedback from different news directors. They're the bosses of the newsroom around the state of Ohio. And Youngstown, Ohio called, and that was market, gosh, I think back then, like 96, TV's broken up in markets, you know, one to New York's one, somewhere in Montana, I think, is like 210. So Cincinnati, we're in the 30s, about 36. So Youngstown, they offered me a Monday through Friday job, and I wasn't even out of college yet. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take it. I went and took it, and I finished up my degree in the I did the morning news and the noon news, finished my degree up in Youngstown State, and then was there 7 years, and then came down to Cincinnati in 2007.
So we overlapped. I worked at the Youngstown Vindicator in 1998 for like 11 months before a Gannett editor's like, do you want to live in Fort Myers and be a police reporter? I was like, well, yes, I do. And I got in my car and I drove down and I was a police reporter at the beach.
It's funny. We overlap because my parents live in Cape Coral now. They moved from Cleveland to Cape Coral, so they're in the Fort Myers area.
So, yes, and then I made my way to Cincinnati after that. So we did overlap a little bit. Youngstown had a ton of news, just like Cincinnati.
Oh, it did. It did. Lots of you were there probably in the beginning of the Jim Traficant era, you know, during the corruption portion of it, because I was there towards the end of his career when they sentenced him to prison back in the day. That had to be like 2002, 2001.
Yes, I can remember that. I mean, because, you know, we read The Plain Dealer and we read The Youngstown Vindicator growing up. We got both papers and we were like a big newspaper house, hence where I am now. yes, I followed along on all of that. So, but did you have to like go to weather school? Is that what it's called?
Yeah, so we had weather school, right? So when I was at Ohio University, my major was journalism and my communications, and my minor was meteorology. They didn't offer a meteorology major then. So then when I went to Youngstown State didn't have meteorology. So I went through a program, Mississippi State, which you can go to Mississippi State, get a meteorology degree, or you can do a correspondence program. And I did that, and a lot of meteorologists do that. And I did that it took about 2 years. I already had some coursework done, obviously, and I got the degree through that, and then went through the certificate, and then went through the American Meteorological Society, and got my AMS seal, and there was that. So yeah, I take a lot of climatology courses, a lot of geography. A lot of, you know, meteorology, of course. Meteorology is a study of, you know, weather and why does it rain? Why does it snow? How do tornadoes form? Climatology is, you know, the climate in certain areas and whatnot. So, yeah.
How different is it now, though, like with computers and everything? I mean, obviously, the basics of how to write a journalism story are the same as when I went to college, but pretty much everything else is different.
Oh, yeah. No, it's completely different. Here, hold on one second. Hey, Max, you can, we're recording, so right. Max. Just go in the house. I'm finished going to finish up the call, okay? Okay, but you just got to listen to me. Sorry, I picked up my son. He phases in the kindergarten here week, so he's full time tomorrow. But today I haven't got him.
We understand. We totally understand.
How's it changed? You know what? Yeah, computer, like doing my everyday job when it comes to graphics is completely changed. I mean, literally, not that I do this, but I could walk in the door like 2 minutes before and I can have a weathercast kind of together, at least graphically. back then, you had to render. It would take 30 minutes to render a graphic to get your presentation together. And, you know, trying to get five or six graphics together, it took a long time. And then even before my time, it was, you know, chalks. And here in Cincinnati, it was Ira Joe Fisher drawing on the plexiglass map and whatnot. So technology has come a long way, you know, the magnetic weather maps from back in the day, to make our graphic presentation so much more eye appealing. Because let's face it, TV is a visual medium. I always say the best way to morning news is, you know, you have to be to wake people up, right? So I would say the best morning newscast is if you turn off all the volume and you just look at the screens and go, okay, which one am I watching without any volume? It's, you know, those are the ones that are eye grabbing, you know, graphically and information and movement and body language is also so important. But yeah, that has changed. And then the model forecasting, we have gotten so much better. Even, you know, Doppler radar was around obviously when I started, but it has gotten down to, you know, with live radar right now. I mean, there used to be a time where you had a 15 minute leeway to give somebody a warning for a storm. Now we can do it, you know, instantaneously. You know, you don't need somebody on the ground in Claremont County saying, okay, I see a tornado. And they've got to call it in the National Weather Service, then they call it into the local authorities. I mean, our radars are so powerful nowadays that we can look at it, and we have, you know, debris detection in it and rotation, and you can see, you know, if there's rotation within the storm just from radar. So you don't need on the ground spotters, and that is huge. That gives you so much warning. I mean, even you look at the storms as of late, some of the tornadoes that have touched down, you know, you go back to the awful one in December there in eastern Kentucky. Eastern Kentucky's been hit so hard this year. You have the flooding in eastern, you have western with the tornadoes. But in western Kentucky back in December of last year, I mean, that happened in the overnight. There was warning, but, you know, folks were sleeping. And the loss of life, that was just astronomical. Now, that happens at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when people are up and they're moving and they're on their phones and they're getting alerts. It's a different story. I think you save a lot more lives because you can survive a tornado if you get to the right spot.
So tell me about debris detection. I think I know what that means, but are you saying that the radar will actually show you if high winds or tornadoes have created debris? Like property damage, tree damage, and stuff like that?
So you have different color algorithms and whatnot. And if you look and see, you know, the colors, basically, you know, it's, think of your toddler, you know, running through, and they build these blocks, and the toddler runs through the block castle, and all the blocks fly everywhere. The radar can pick that up. So the radar is picking up all this stuff that's flying, you know, that's, you know, not rain, that's falling straight down, and you can see it that way. Also with velocity looking, you know, with the, it tracks the winds going towards the radar and away from the radar. And that also gives you some indication of rotation. And that's come a long way even since when I started. You used to just look at the radar and look for what we call a hook echo. It's like a little comma out of the bottom of a thunderstorm cell. And that usually is where the rotation is. Well, now you can use things like debris detection and velocity and go in a little bit deeper. So yeah, it basically picks up the column of debris.
So if a tornado is coming and you're live on the air, as everyone does, are you looking at the computer screen and you're watching it, and then you're just kind of live talking about what you're seeing? Is that how it works?
Yeah, people always ask me how you've been. In your jobs, we all do, you know. I mean, you might be going for a deadline and talking to your source, and they're telling you, and you're typing, you know, you're asking the questions and you're typing your story at the same time, and you know, people are, you know, waving, looking. It's I don't know, like, I'm all, when you do it, you just multitask and you figure out how to do it. Takes time, takes practice. I definitely would not be, if you want to call it quote unquote, as smooth, you know, my first couple years back in the day. But yeah, you're on the air and you're reading the radar. And honestly, when you're in severe weather coverage, the viewer, I think, the person watching, you know, whether it's streaming now or, you know, on broadcast, you know, they want the Wizard of Oz curtain pulled back a little bit. They're not looking for you to be completely, you know, scripted, and you're not scripted. And so it's okay to say, hey, you know, here's what we're going to do now. If I'm looking at something and I think, wow, that looks like it's, could be some rotation. Hey guys, what we're going to do, we're going to put our debris detection on. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to click right here. You can see here, hey, let's put a track on this now. So you use phrases like that in order to give you that bridge point, so your mind can say, okay, now I got to click on this to get the track going and set it up. So a lot of it, yeah, it is all on the fly. And you are, and sometimes you're on the air and there's a severe thunderstorm warning for the county, and then all of a sudden that storm, you might see it, and you mention it, say, hey, you know what, this is spinning up a little more so, we're seeing some more rotation. I wouldn't be surprised if they issued a tornado warning for this, and boom, tornado warning will happen. Or on the flip side, sometimes the National Weather Service will issue a tornado warning because they see something, and then it might break down. These storms can do that. You know, they pulsate up and down. And you, it's okay on the air to go, okay, this tornado warning's still going on, but here's what I think. It is breaking up. It is this or that. So, yes, you kind of adapt on the fly when you're on the air. That's kind of the best part. I always compare it to a doctor. A doctor, you know, of course, nobody wants a surgery. Nobody wants to, you know, have a bad sickness, you know, but it's nice to, you know, give stitches and stickers and the patients every once in a while when you do a surgery or get in there. That's what you went to school for. So I went to school for severe weather, which is the big, you know, what I went to school for. So when I have a chance to protect people and give them the heads up, then that's a huge plus.
What's the most memorable weather event you have covered in your time in Cincinnati?
Gosh, the most memorable weather event I've covered in my time. Trying to think. So there's events that happen, obviously, and then there's events that you go to. So I would have to say the ones I went to, obviously, just last December. You know, I've been here 15 years this month, and that was the most devastation I've ever seen down in Western Kentucky, down in Western Kentucky with the tornadoes that hit places like Mayfield, and then as you went into areas of Bowling Green. I've never seen, we came up on that right then in the morning hours. It was dark. We drove down there. They called me like at midnight, drove down. And I remember as I had my big flashlight and looking around, I'm like, okay, it's dark. I don't really see much. And then we went up on this hill and looked down, and it looked like a meteor hit. I mean, these houses were just, and you know, they're basement, and kids are missing, and the one guy's how the mom brought the kid out and was fine. He's like, I'll be right back, and came back, and the mom had passed away, like in that matter of just a few moments. That was really, on a lighter note, I remember there's had to be, I think it was 2009, maybe 2010, when Big Butter Jesus, remember the Big Butter Jesus up north?
Oh yeah.
I was on the air when it got struck by lightning at like 10:20 in the evening. And that was before you really, I mean, you still got 2009. Yeah, we got pictures sent to us and stuff, but it wasn't as instantaneously as it is now. And, you know, those old cameras on your phones,
right?
And those flip phones were a little grainy. But I remember when we got the first picture, I was like, oh my. So that was, yeah, going on the air and saying Big Butter Jesus was struck. That was, that's a memory I have as well.
You know, I remember when that happened. I was at USA Today still at the time before I came back to Cincinnati. And we had some reporters that are basically doing digital surveillance, looking for things that are trending, things that are kind of breaking through the noise. And one of them said to me, hey, you're from Ohio. Is there really a Big Butter Jesus? Because it just got like hit by lightning. And I all I could do was laugh because I had to say, yes, indeed. There is a big. There was a big.
There was,
but now
exactly.
It's back. It's it's not butter anymore. It's
not butter. And yeah. It was touch. See, I always was the butter same. Jesus, but there was also touchdown Jesus. People called it too.
Right.
Yes.
Which, if you've been to South Bend, Indiana, you know what the real touchdown Jesus is. But
yes, my wife went to graduated from Notre Dame.
Okay.
So, yeah,
I have a Cleveland versus Cincinnati question to ask you.
Got it.
So you grew up in Cleveland.
Yes.
Most Clevelanders I know that have moved to Cincinnati, including our very own Dan Horn, refuse to fully embrace all things Cincinnati because of that Cleveland pride. Like, Dan still follows the Browns. He wrote a column about how he'll never understand Cincinnati chili.
I was against that. He said, should I write this? And I said, no.
Don't listen.
I thought he was setting himself up for, you know, a lot of hate, and he got some of it. But then there are some that truly like, and I know, what are you going to say? I haven't embraced Cincinnati, but are you still a Cleveland guy at heart, or have you fully become a Cincinnatian?
I'll be honest, I'm fully a Cincinnatian. I think I really am. I mean, I know I am. Like, this is the first time. This is like a therapy moment for me. I really have no interest in Cleveland. I don't. Like, I have great memories of there growing up. obviously. The thing is with Cleveland, it's so spread out, right? Like when I moved here, people I'm like, hey, I'm going up to Westchester. Westchester, like you need a passport to go to Westchester from downtown. I'm like, it's 20 minutes. It's not growing up in Cleveland. I grew up in Chagrin Falls on the east side of Cleveland. That was about 25 minutes to downtown, meaning, you know, to the stadiums, to the skyscrapers as a kid, right?
Yeah.
So here, the number one thing, when I moved here in 07, it was this month, August of 07, and Mount Adams was kind of like the OTR, right? Where everybody, all the you know, you had young professionals there, you had retirees, you had folks paying, you know, back then I think I paid $675 for my rent, and you had people who had $1 million houses. It's a great place. That's where I grew up. I embraced it right when I moved there. I love that kind of inner city suburbs that we have, you know. You're not in downtown Cleveland and driving 5 minutes to a place like Hyde Park, or driving five minutes to a place like Oakley. It's going to take a little while to get out of there. Now, Cleveland has had neighborhoods since I've grown up. They've come around the west side of town there. It's really come along nicely, Rocky River and whatnot, but that's still a separate city. But yeah, I am definitely a Cincinnatian. Growing up, we were always kind of a Buckeye fan. We were more Buckeyes than Browns, I think. Saturdays were really big in our house. I will say the one team, Indians, Guardians, I still kind of follow them for baseball. So if the Guardians and the Reds play each other, then maybe I kind of go a little Guardians just that one time.
That's
but
okay.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely a Cincinnatian. When I moved to town, it's funny. It was labor. I lived here for a week. They put me in a hotel, and then my parents brought me. We got the U-Haul. We came down. And it was Labor Day weekend that I was moving in, and I was filling in on the morning show on Labor Day, Monday morning. But Sunday, we were moving in. Well, I didn't realize the whole fireworks and Riverfest back there in 2007. So I'm trying to get a U-Haul truck up into Mount Adams on Sunday night, like at 5 o'clock, when the fireworks are going off at 9. And there's no parking up there anyway.
Did you just give up?
There's definitely no parking. What's that?
Did you just give up and stop at
No, there was a police officer. I'm like, he's like, well, you can keep it on here for a second. You got to unload it real quick. And so we unloaded it really quick. And then my dad drove it somewhere and parked it. I think he parked it like in Hyde Park Plaza parking lot or something. My mom went back and picked him up. But my parents had a great time. I had to go to bed to do the news in the morning. But my parents went out and had a good time, watched fireworks. Had a great time.
Oh, that's fantastic.
All right. So we do have a very hard-hitting question. And
okay.
Now, I did book you kind of at the last second, so I haven't told too many people that you were going to be on, but I have mentioned it in passing to a couple people, including our mutual friend, Rhonda DeWine.
Yes. My favorite hairstylist.
But the question at hand, and this is very important, how accurate is the Farmer's Almanac, and what do you think about the prediction this year?
And can I also quote before you answer that question?
Yes.
So,
yes.
The Des Moines Register did their Farmer's Almanac story and basically said that the almanac is declaring the North Central region a hibernation zone. And we're not much better if you look at what the Farmer's Almanac says. So now you can answer, just so people fully understand how grave the forecast is this year for winter.
Now these Farmer's Almanac forecasts are actually calculated about 2 years in advance. Did you know that? They study this a long time, right? They look at the tidal action of moons and whatnot, and sunspots and all that sort of stuff. So I will say there have been times, and I've actually pointed it out on the air, where they were right on. I forget what the year was, but there was a year here when we had super snowy February, January, where they got like two of the storms dead on. Now, mind you, it doesn't happen every year, but from some of their predictions this year, and when you look at some of the stuff coming out of NOAA and coming out of predictions, you know, more traditional sources, it does look like we could be colder than average and wetter than average. Now, colder than average and wetter than average doesn't necessarily mean 50 inches of snow falling. Because here so much of the ice is always a problem, but it could be, you know, 32, 33 degrees in November for highs, and you got that wet, cold rain. But it does look, you know, the Farmer's Almanac saying it's going to be a snowy December, very cold early on. They go as far as saying Thanksgiving weekend's going to, I was reading today, wet and snowy and slushy. So we'll see. They're, it's not always spot on. I always say with everything, weather is trend. You got to look at different trends, and you got to look at patterns and how they set up. And sure, you might, we can look 10 days from now and go, it's very difficult for me 10, 15 days to go, okay, that Tuesday it's going to be 86 degrees and sunny. What I can say, okay, it looks like we're getting a warming trend. So that's going to, you know, advertise with 79 or whatever it is, and it's going to be more warmer. So you can get trends and you can have patterns, but it's pretty hard to pinpoint exactly on a certain week and a certain weekend. I'll put it that way.
I can't imagine trying to predict like 2 years from now.
I know, right?
As you know, I barely planned the podcast in a couple hours of the future this morning.
But I'm right there with you. I'm like that. I've always been kind of a last minute. Because if I plan ahead, then I'm overthinking, and then I'm thinking about it even more, and I'm like, oh, I got to change this. I like even in school, I would always wait to the last minute to do my assignments, which, you know, probably drove my parents crazy and stuff. But I always did fairly well because I went with my gut reaction, right? You go with your gut reaction. You're not sitting there editing, going back and forth. You want to make sure, of course, in our business, you get the facts straight and right. But yeah, you just go with your gut reaction.
All right. So we're going to let you go because I know you're busy today. But
oh, no.
You're recently married.
Yes.
People were in a panic when you were not on the air.
I know. It wasn't like I was gone for 5 weeks.
We actually had to do the Where's Frank Mazzullo story.
I saw that. People were sending me texts. We were in the British Virgin Islands on the honeymoon. They were sending me texts with the story. I was technically only gone like a week and a half.
It seemed longer.
It seemed longer.
Because you know I do have to say, I don't watch Fox 19 in the morning. I listen to it. Because I put on the TV, and then while I'm like getting ready and everything, so I'm like, that's one of the reasons why I love the morning show so much, because you can listen and you don't necessarily need to see.
It's almost like radio, talk radio on your television, and that's what you try to kind of program for. And then you know our consultants and whatnot say if there's something I really want you to see, I'll say, hey, come over here, take a look at this.
Yeah.
Get over. But yeah, a lot of people are. I mean, let's face it, you know, you're getting ready for work. You got the kids jumping around everywhere. You got your movement. Yeah. So a lot of it is. Research has shown, that's one thing that hasn't changed with morning news, that people are have it on, but they're not necessarily always there.
Well, we appreciate all of the very honest answers. I hope I do not have to hibernate this winter.
No, I hope not. I like a nice snowy weekend, though. Make some soup. Wine.
I know. One. And, oh, like maybe over Christmas. Fine. That almost never happens. Maybe in February. I know my poor.
I'm good until Valentine's Day. Once the February 14th hits, warm it up.
Yeah. Thanksgiving? No.
Yeah, that's true.
But
travel.
Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, it's so great. Great talking with the two of you. And anytime you need anything, let me know.
All right. Have a good day.
Thanks. See you guys. Bye.
All right, I think that we got all of our questions in there pretty much. I don't want to hibernate this summer, but this winter, we'll see how that goes. first, we're going to get through the last summer weekends, though. There's a huge weekend coming up in Cincinnati, plus then, of course, Labor Day is coming, and that's always one of the biggest weekends of the whole year here downtown. But I did get an opportunity. One of the things happening this weekend, we have the Bengals playing the Rams. Of course, it's the rematch from the Super Bowl. Not exactly a rematch, probably.
I don't think any of our starters are playing.
Yes,
so
that's
not going to be.
It's not exactly the same.
There'll be nice shots of Joe Burrow sitting on the sidelines, looking, you know, like a caged tiger. No pun intended. Waiting to play.
Definitely.
But no, it'll be interesting.
But it is also FC Cincinnati's Hell is Real home game. And they are doing it up over there. They are not messing around. This is a rivalry that really starts with that sign on the highway, Hell is Real, that is, I believe, supposed to be a religious sign. I've driven by it many times on my way to Youngstown, but we've adopted it as our soccer, you know, kind of rivalry theme.
Yeah, and for those who aren't familiar, a match like this could be called, like an interstate match or, you know, the I-71 match. But if you've driven between Cincinnati and Columbus, you know what the hell is real sign is. And I think that's just a wonderful, you know, way to embrace the quirkiness of this place we live and just, okay, well, that's a little bit alarming to see that sign, but let's turn it into the theme of this match.
So, and they're running with it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
First of all, the graphics in the stadium, it's like, it's fire. It's graphics of fire. And the way, because the video boards are just all, you know, ribbons wrapped around and everything. And so it looks like flames, like, circling the building and on the huge scoreboards. So they're ready. They kind of showed those off to the media. But they also, God bless their hearts, did their chef, Philip Baxman, made a whole Hell is Real menu for the game.
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. And it is, I said that it was everywhere from spicy to, oh no, I need another glass of water.
Yeah.
so if you really like spicy things.
I'm guessing with the theme Hell is Real to work with, it's hot food, spicy food.
It is. My favorite thing was the Hell is Real burger. They are like mini sliders of like the burgers, and it has a little injectable dropper stuck into the top of the bun, and you can put as much, and it's filled with hot sauce, and you can put as much hot sauce into the bun, which is black. It's charcoal colored and okay. Like specially made for this.
I'm into this.
Okay, yeah. So you can make it as hot as you want.
Now, did you ask what kind of hot sauce is in there? Is it like, you know, your typical Tabasco style pepper, or is it like habanero, or God forbid, ghost pepper? I mean, that's hot.
Oh, come on, Burl. I took notes. It's habanero. They provided some things, right. And I took notes while I was there. Everyone else was doing that. It seemed like a thing to do. I kind of just stopped by because I was curious. I have a wedding to go to, and I can't go. So I was like, ooh, what is this going to be? They had like a spicy chocolate cupcake. The hot chicken schnitzel sandwich came with the hot sauce. It was so hot. But that's not really like super hot. It's not my thing. I know it is some people's thing. And I think that they're just really going to be happy with how that all turned out. And there's also even special beer. It's the soccer stadium. Of course.
Of course.
It's Grain Works. Hell's Real. H-E-L-L-E-S. Hell's Real.
Okay.
I mean, you could just go and be a foodie this weekend, I think. They think they want you to go and watch the soccer game, but the food's a draw this time.
Yeah. Well, this has become a nice rivalry match between the Crew and FC. Do you think this will stay? Do you think this is just a one-time deal, or is this intensity around Hell is Real going to be like, you know, become That's So Cincinnati? Like, will it...
I do think it's going to become That So Cincinnati, from what I can tell, from talking to Pat Brennan, who covers FC Cincinnati for us. I mean, we're really upping the ante here, and I think that's going to make them up the ante. They have a new stadium. We have one, and I just think it really is going to be a back and forth. In fact, I don't even think that people really thought at the beginning that Columbus was going to be our major rival. I think there was like, oh, is it going to be Louisville or Nashville? And like, we made it our own. We the fans adopted the nickname. It's just organic of what it is. It's not like soccer dictated like what this is going to be. This is from the ground up.
Well, I don't know the backstory of the actual Hell is Real sign, but this is making me think that if this farmer or whoever put up that billboard, you know, one day decides to take it down or whatever, that the two teams are going to have to figure out how to, like, find a billboard and put it back up. Like, what this has done is made the Hell is Real billboard, you know, something that has to stay. It's become an official.
That billboard has been there for the 20 years that I've been driving back and forth between Cincinnati and Youngstown, and there's also one with the Ten Commandments. And, I mean, they must have redone it in 20 years, driving by.
Yeah.
Like, it is serious, I don't think it's going anywhere.
We should start a new series here called What's the Deal with Blank, and that could be, like, the first one we do, the backstory.
I've read that backstory somewhere, but
I'm going to go assign it now and make some reporter's life miserable because that's what I do.
I'm going to write a story about this podcast, though.
All right.
I'm busy.
All right.
All right. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We really appreciate it. Definitely follow us for coverage this weekend. You can follow, you know, Kelsey and Jason and Charlie for all of our Bengals coverage. Pat Brennan, you know, he every home, every game. He travels with the team. Your FC Cincinnati coverage, follow him. And then if you wanted to learn about the weather, I'm going to write a story about Frank. So there's plenty to do this weekend.